This interview is brought to you by Panasonic Lumix G cameras for today's photographer. Okay, I'm here hanging out with a guy known as That Nikon Guy. You can find him at thatnikonguy.com. His name is Matt Granger, and he's agreed to come on to talk to us about why he is That Nikon Guy, what's his affinity for Nikon, as well as some other amazing projects that he has going on. And, you know, full disclosure, there's some Nikon products on the shelf behind me if you're watching this hangout. So we are kindred spirits, I guess you'd say we are.
I guess so.
So Matt, welcome to This Week in Photo. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So where are you in the world right now?
I am in a 2-star hotel room in Toronto. You can see I've just angled the camera so you're not seeing all my crap that's spread out everywhere. I just got back from Cuba about 2 hours ago.
Oh, wow. 2 hours ago. Yeah. Two-star hotel room. That's a little dangerous. You know, make sure you don't bring any bed bugs or anything back with you when you leave
there. That's right. My life is not a fashion show. As long as my gear doesn't get stolen, I don't care how fancy the room is.
Love it. Love it. Okay. So this is your first time on This Week in Photo. So let's introduce you to the audience. Who is Matt Granger, and what's your sort of, pedicure in photography?
My pedicure?
Yes.
Oh, pedigree.
A pedigree. Pedicure. I did not say pedigree. Thailand. That's later on my calendar today. That's why it's in my...
Gotcha. When I was in Thailand, though, I got, what are they called? Frangipani. Yes. I got a pedicure down there when I was traveling with a friend. It was lovely. So thank you for bringing that up.
You gotta maintain things. Come on, I'm just saying.
It's called manscaping, you know.
Yes. All right. We're going off the rails again. See. Okay. So who are you, and what is your pedicure / pedigree in photography?
Okay. Well, I don't know where you start with a question like that. I grew up in the country. My dad's a farmer. Mom's a teacher. Actually, there's like 20 teachers in my family. Let's see. I didn't take to farming. I don't have the manual labor work ethic required for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But from my dad and his father and up the generations, I did get his love of photography. So I guess that's where, you know, this path that I'm on all really started. His mother was a mad photographer. I mean, not as in hugely creative or anything, but she would shoot a roll a day the whole time. Wow. I knew her.
Wow.
Every day. It was all, it'd be 12 shots of somebody, you know, cutting the cake or whatever, you know. It wasn't, you know, amazing stuff, but she was just prolific. Every day we'd be going into town to the pharmacy to drop off one roll of film, pick up the other one. And I think I inherited all of her cameras as she kept upgrading them every 6 months or something. So I think I'll blame her for my gear addiction that I confess to having now.
As we all do, my friend.
Yeah. Just own it, you know. I did photography back in high school. So when I was 14 or 15 or something like that, I was lucky, despite being in a small country school, we had full dark room and that kind of thing. So I was able to take a full, you know, course in photography then. And then, I don't know, like I always had a camera with me, but until I took that course, actually, I never thought of photography as anything more than capturing moments. I used it like a little portable photocopier, you know, just there's something happening, take a shot just to, you know, have the memory. The same way people use their iPhone to take a photo of their dinner so they can show their friends. Nothing creative whatsoever. Yeah. No storytelling. Never occurred to me that there could be an art to it until I actually studied the artists of photography.
And how did you do that? Were you formally trained in photography, or was it a self-taught sort of enterprise?
Well, the course I did as part of my school certificate, what we called, I don't even know what they call it now, but you know, my final education at high school, I did that formal training, but I didn't go to uni or something like that. That's a whole different story. I did end up doing film studies, which is, you know, related in the storytelling and the cultural studies side of it, but never, not the actual technical stuff. I didn't do at uni. So I would say self-taught, really, because there was such a big gap between, you know, I learned on a 35, actually, what would I learn on? So the first cameras I was shooting on were those little drop-in cartridge cameras, fully automatic, like I say, just snap, snap, snap.
Yep.
Then during that course, I used, you know, a full manual 35mm film camera. And then I think I had that, but I was mostly shooting with digital cameras all the time. So my dad, in his other life, he traveled a lot. So, you know, he'd always bring us back the latest 1.5 megapixel, latest, greatest thing from Japan to play with. And it was probably in my first uni degree that I, no, when would it have been? I don't know. It was sometime after that that I actually got my first DSLR and really got back into it. So, you know, it's, yeah, it was a bit of a, it went in leaps and starts, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then now you're here. So let's fast forward to today and this brand that you've built called That Nikon Guy. So first of all, why Nikon? Why not that Sony guy, that Olympus guy, that Canon guy? Why that Nikon guy?
Well, I should point out I'm only known as That Nikon Guy in North America. The rest of the world, I'm That Nikon Guy.
Okay.
We'll let that slide.
Right. Everyone else is pronouncing it wrong, for the record. It's Nikon.
Clearly. Yeah, look, there was no strategy there. And if I had to do it again, I wouldn't have chosen That Nikon Guy. Mm-hmm. The day that I set up my YouTube account, I had a bag that I thought I'd do a review on. I thought, I shoot with Nikon, why not call myself that? It's a little bit catchy, easy to remember, and Nikon shooters may be more likely to watch me. Not even thinking about that Canon's bigger than Nikon. Then there's Sony, Olympus, Pentax, Minolta, Fuji, everyone else in the market that I may ostracize. Thankfully, I think most people who watch the channel, there's very little that I do other than, you know, if I'm saying, okay, here's the new D4, here's all of the features, let's do a walkthrough. All the tutorials I do, really, I'm talking about settings that every DSLR has, and it makes no difference which one, you know, I might use. I said, might say VR instead of IS or something like that, but, you know, it's all pretty universal. But I don't find Nikon easy to deal with whatsoever. And if they're getting free promotion out of me using them, well, that's fair enough because, you know, I chose the name because people like Nikon, but I'm not trying to, you know, endorse them.
You're not sponsored. You're not a sponsored photographer. You just pick the name out of it.
I can barely get an email return from them.
Really? Really? So how does it work? Because I know just people, by virtue of me talking about the cameras that I shoot with, think I'm a Nikon guy, right? There's that brand of, hey, you chose that, or you're a Mac guy, or you're a whatever guy. You know, you have to get that brand rather than, I'm a photographer that happened to have chose this particular tool to do my work with. You get branded with that tool. You've explicitly branded yourself with that tool. So how does that bring sort of the crazy people out of the closet that want to challenge you to say that, well, hey, my Canon is better than your Nikon, or my Olympus is better than your Nikon? You know, do you get a lot of those people?
Well, I think the Canon 1DX is better than my Nikon D4. And I think the Olympus OMD is better than the Nikon V1, J1, whatever.
Yeah.
So, and then,
do you say
so
that?
What?
Do you say that on your site and say, okay, this camera is better than this equivalent Nikon model?
Well, you know, it's hard to compare two things, and it is all subjective, but I think we're on the gear already. But yeah, I do think the 1DX is kind of the top flagship 35mm camera on the market at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's not that big a deal. If something, you know, really groundbreaking came out, I'm not that tied to it. When I chose it, and this is the advice I give to everyone, just see what's comfortable in your hand, what feels intuitive. I looked at what was out there. I actually started using Olympus. My dad was an Olympus guy for 40, 50 years, and I've still got his OM1. I've got a bunch of Olympus gear. And like I said, I'm just a gear nut. Like, and it's not photography related. I got the latest and greatest whatever. Back in college, my nickname was Inspector Gadget because I always had the latest thing that came out.
I love it.
But I I really don't care at all what people use. And I've never looked at a picture and thought, that must have been with the new 5D Mark III. Just look at that sharpness, or it's like, whatever. It's now, I use it, and that's it. You know, use what you like.
Now, you've gone on, so you've sort of channeled that Inspector Gadget nature of yours into your website, because I'm looking at your site here. I can bring it up in the Hangout here. Looking at your site here, and you have done reviews of Pocket Wizard Plus X, the Drobo 5D, ring flashes, all this stuff. So is this your outlet for letting people see kind of in your head of what you think about different gear?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like, to give a bit of background, I did not start the YouTube channel with a big game plan on how it was all going to play out. I literally started because I had a new bag that I wanted to do a review on, and that was it. And then people left comments, and it grew slowly, slowly. And then, you know, I made videos responding to what people were asking the most. And now it's kind of, I actually split them. I have two YouTube channels, one where I try and keep all of the reviews, and one that's more about teaching. So still, you know, if I get something new, like a new Pocket Wizard, as you say, when it gets announced or whatever, then I'll do a video on the news and reviews channel. And then if I ever end up getting a hold of one, then when I show what its features are and how I use it on a shoot, then that actually goes onto that Nikon guy, which is, I realize it's a bit of a bit counterintuitive that that Nikon guy is the less product related one. You know, it's more about technique.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it is. But I do really enjoy using that stuff. And what I, you know, it's either stuff that I use and own and have bought, or brands that are friendly and can see past the name and are happy to send me stuff to do a review on or to have a look at. And as I say, to be honest, in my experience in Sydney, Fuji and Olympus are much easier to deal with than Nikon. So I probably get my hands on more of their stuff, more diverse range of stuff from them.
Love it. So let's switch gears while I have you here. You kicked off a Kickstarter project, which I'm gonna bring that up too, and it's called Private Bodies, right? So
little nudity warning here. I know some people are a bit funny about it, so I don't know how far you're gonna scroll down the page, but you may see some topless people.
Okay, so we'll leave it right here just to keep it PG-13. So Private Bodies, an art photography book. Take me through the genesis of this book and the Kickstarter campaign and why you're doing it.
Cool. Well, I'll talk about the concept first then. Something I'm really genuinely passionate and interested in is what sort of trust there exists within society for photographers, how photographers are perceived, and how people relate to having their image taken. It also happens that I love and specialize in nude photography, but I've had a couple of different projects over time looking at trust and how people perceive photographers.
Yeah.
So this one is one of the few things that from the first shoot, it was a project that I was setting up. It wasn't just a let's do something organically and then have it go somewhere. You know, I didn't ever think, and then I'll put it on Kickstarter, because I'm pretty sure I started this project before Kickstarter existed. Mm-hmm. But I still do other projects on the same topic where I approach strangers in the street to ask them, can I take your portrait, to break down those barriers of my own nerves about approaching strangers and what will they think if I'm trying to ask, you know, to take their photo, and, you know, the trust issues that we face as photographers thanks to things like paparazzi these days.
Yeah.
So this one in particular, I've been shooting for about 3 years, and it's basically, the concept is it's people nude in their own homes. The home is somewhere really private, but it's also somewhere pretty safe where pretty much everyone feels comfortable to be nude some of the time, you know?
Yeah.
So, and the great thing about it is then every shoot was different. Nearly always I'd be walking in saying, hi, Frederick, nice to meet you. Never met you before. Start chatting, start shooting. Never seen the house before. And, you know, we just go from room to room, and the shots have to end up different in everyone because everyone's home's different. Every person's different. And we just chat really organically for an hour and a half or 2 hours, however long it takes. And that's it. it's almost always they've been shot in the person's own home, but it's generally it's anywhere that's a special place for them. So say one girl flew up, I don't know if you know Australian geography at all, but she flew up from Melbourne to Sydney to be part of the book, and she had grown up on a horse farm. So we actually went up to a horse stud up in the mountains and we shot in the stables and in the field with her. I know this may sound a little bit creepy to people, but nude with horses, and it was just beautiful. It's
nice.
Lovely to see that kind of thing.
Now, like, talk to me a little bit about how, well, first of all, so the models that are, so she flew up, did you fly her up, or is this a volunteer effort? Are you paying these people? How does it work?
Everyone who's in the book, no one's been paid. There are some people who, so really there's a whole dichotomy of people there. My goal was to have as broad a cross section as possible. The reality of it is it tends to be younger, fitter, more confident people who, you know, there's quite a few dancers in there and stuff, where the thought process they've told me they have is, you know, I'm in the best condition of my life. I want to, you know, get involved in a project like this whilst I'm looking so great, so I can look back on it in 50 years and think, you know, that was me when I was 25 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But most of the people were, there may have been one or two who have done quite a few nude shoots, but most had never done one before. And they range from doctors and lawyers to students to parents to a woman who was 8.5 months pregnant with her husband in their home. And every time it's
so
different.
But so no, you said no people, right? So this is not just women, not just this is not glamour photography, right? This is
not at all.
This is real sort of environmental type photography, correct?
Yeah. So I call it intimate portraiture. Basically, it's a portrait that should work on its own. As you say, it's environmental because it is in their own space, but it's not for me anyway. And I'm not saying one's better than the other. I think there's a place for everything. I really do. But the breasts or the private parts or the bum aren't the focus of the shot in my work. It should be an image that works by itself. And there's nudity, which I personally don't find offensive. I find it, if it's done tastefully, really beautiful. But there are some variations. So generally, it would be us chatting, you know, just like we are right now, except we'd be in the same room and you'd have your clothes off. Yeah. We just chat and get to know each other. And really, you'd be surprised. There hasn't been a single shoot where there was an uncomfortable vibe, even for people who I met for the very first time. They'd never had a photo shoot at all. Some were totally camera shy. You just break that down by actually being there with them and really connecting with someone, and not just making small talk whilst you're thinking about your settings, actually, you know, having a proper conversation with someone. And it's a really, really nice thing. So, but that said, there were times where, of course, we can't just keep chatting the whole time, because then every shot someone's going to have their mouth open talking when I go to take the photo. And there'll be things like, okay, the light's not quite working, let's move the curtain, or can you sit on that side of the bed instead, or can you move your hair behind your shoulder just to make the shot work? But it's not really heavily posed stuff. But there are also some shots in there which are just bodyscape. So, you know, I shot a bunch of dancers who just have amazing physique. So it's like, well, you're laying there on your side on the bed and I can see all of these amazing curves through your hip. Of course, I want to shoot that as well, right?
Yeah.
So it's quite a mix. But for me, the test of what shots go into the book are, well, what I think is a beautiful shot, full stop, but also a shot that they will love, and shots that if their friends see it will think, yeah, that's Frederick, or as a shot you've got up there, that's Steenie. You know, one where, you know, we all have our bullshit smile, you know, where actually you're uncomfortable, but you're smiling anyway. Yep. So I want it to be shots where when they look at it, they say, yeah, that's me in my own home, comfortable and having fun, not posing awkwardly for the camera.
Now, how do you safeguard against, or how do you combat the idea of, okay, this is just a creepy guy that wants to take nude pictures of people? Because a lot of photographers are that, right? Which sully the waters for real photographers like yourself. So the photographers are just like, you know what, hey, I just want to take pictures of nude women. I'm going to get on Model Mayhem and say that I want to you know, do some nudes, and I get to see naked women and take pictures of them and enjoy the photos later, you know. So those photographers that are out there by the legions, we call them GWCs, or guy, just guy with camera, right? So the perception would be, okay, you know, and rightly so, women, you know, would say, okay, let me keep my guard up and assume the worst, that Matt is just one of those guys. How do you get past that and say, hey, I am a real photographer. This is not a nefarious, you know, technique to get you out of your clothes. How do you do that?
Well, to be honest, that's part of the process for me of the, well, that's part of the process and the point that I want to look at that. And so, taking a step back for a second, I really think like 50, 60, 80 years ago, if somebody wanted to take your photo, you'd be so flattered because it just wasn't an everyday thing. Yeah. And now in the age of digital manipulation and bottom feeders taking shots up people's skirts and putting it on the front page of magazines and stuff, of course we as a collective have lost a lot of that trust, and everyone has a camera. There are creeps out there. Sorry, poor English. So yeah, that is something to deal with. But in terms of how do I get past it? Well, I have a body of work, and I'm always 100% clear up front. This is, if you dig the project and you want to look at, you know, be involved in something that's looking at trust and people's issues towards their body and this and that, and that it's in your home and you know, it's going to take an hour and a half or 2 hours. I'm going to shoot at your home. You can have your whole family there if you want. That's it. I guess that's the biggest indicator. If it's a creep, they're not going to want you to have people there. I don't really set any rules. And I never ask to see what someone looks like before I accept them into the project. So that's another thing. And I'd be just as happy for you to pose for me as, you know, a model looking woman.
Yeah.
That's not what it's about. I have to be honest. The reality is, if you look at the shots in the book, they're not the kind of people you just walk past on the street as a typical cross section, but that's a result of who put their hand up, not who I said yes to.
Okay. So as a result of people being probably more comfortable with their bodies and being photographed nude, that resulted in those people wanting to be photographed, and that's who made it into the book, right?
Yeah, but again, it's more complicated than that. So people who, of course, I had people getting in touch saying, oh, I want to be published. I want to get out there. I'm trying to become a glamour model or something, so I want to be involved in this, and I'm really comfortable. But to be honest, they were the ones generally, this isn't 100% true across everyone, but who had the most conditions and had the most, you know, restrictions and wanted to do the boobs out posing and all of this nonsense, which is just not what it's about.
Yeah.
And it was people who, as a big generalization, who look a bit more every day like you and me, who were actually comfortable with their bodies, and there was none of that. And for me, a lot of the most beautiful shots in the book are just, you know, people with a bit of a spare tire and a wonderful smile and comfortable with themselves and their environment.
That's great. And then what are they doing with the shot? So I assume that you, or is this a wrong assumption, that after the shoot's over, you give them the shots as well? What do they do with those shots?
Well, that's up to them. Some, if they are, you know, looking to build a portfolio, then they can use them in that. Some would have, I'm sure, gone and made some prints for themselves. For a lot of the people, I really think it was, you know, a process for themselves to overcome some barrier that they had or some lack of confidence that they had. Mm-hmm. I had people after a shoot saying, I was terrified before you arrived and, you know, I'm shy about my body, and even with my partner sometimes I'm a bit reserved, but now that I've done it, I feel so liberated and I want to shoot again. And then I contact people 3 months later to give them an update on what's happening with the book, and they say, you know, since I did that, I've posed for three more photographers, and I'm so liberated now. And it's a great thing. But yeah, so how it works is, no one at all has been paid to be in the book because, like I say, it's a cross section. I want them to dig the project. I don't want it to look like Ralph magazine or FHM. I want it to be people who are really interested in the project. They varied from like 45 minutes. A couple of times someone was in town and really wanted to shoot, or I was in their town and they really wanted to shoot, but for whatever reason, we couldn't shoot at their house. It might have been a long way away, or they lived with really conservative parents or a share house. So then we've actually shot in a hotel room, which is not ideal, but still, you know, it kind of works. And I don't know the exact breakdown of how many men and women and the ages and ethnicities and all of that kind of thing, but it's a cross section. I'd say that.
So what will the final book look like? I mean, is it a coffee table book or the final product?
It'll be portrait orientation, quite a big one, like this big, like bigger than A4, hardcover, 200 pages thereabouts, a little bit over probably. An old school photo book, you know, it's not like the sort of one that you take to your lab and get made for your travel shots or whatever. A properly printed, beautifully laid out one. There will be a little bit of text at the front. I've got a buddy who's an author in Sydney who's writing a foreword on the concept and all of that kind of thing. Yeah. And I'll have a little blurb as well. But the bulk of it is going to be full-on images, you know, like full page or a couple of images to a page, see how it works in layout. And I'll be grouping them together by subject. So you'll go through and, for example, on screen there is Orlando, so there'd be a bunch of different shots that I shot with him. And that's the other cool thing about it. That one reminds me actually how it worked in terms of getting models. It was so organic. So I shot Orlando's cousin and his girlfriend, and then they referred Orlando that he would probably love to do it as well. So it went through little groups of friends like that. I went through a phase where I shot a whole bunch of dancers and I shot a whole bunch of lawyers and people who had tattoos or into certain subcultures, but were really interested in the project. And, you know, I'd shoot and shoot and shoot. And then that pool would kind of dry up. And then I would, you know, start shooting with someone else and they'd refer a friend. And it just happened like that.
And there it goes. So I'm looking at the Kickstarter page now, and you're at 387 backers, and you're at $25,382 pledged of a $30,000 goal with 6 days to go. So how
is that good?
That I think that's fantastic. I mean, for you know, $4,700 roughly in 6 days. I think you can do that. I think if the TWIP listeners pitch in and head over to this page and help Matt get to his goal, we'll get there, right?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the plug and I really hope so. And I know there's still people who up in the air about it, that kind of thing, or, you know, everyone leaves things to the last moment. But I'm so keen to get this up, not because, like I said, when I started advertising the project, that budget we're aiming at, that's not like a slush fund for me to go on holidays. Printing books costs a lot, man.
Yeah.
And I live in Australia, which is in the middle of bloody nowhere. So shipping a 1.5 or 2 kilo, so 5 pound book around the world costs a fortune. So that's to cover all of the print and layout and the photographic prints that are also up on offer. And we've got paintings from some of the shots in the book. And,
wow,
you know, I really want to get it out there. I approached all of these people or the kind of the agreement we had, at least in, you know, if not on paper, in principle, was that this is to make a high quality art publication that you can look back on in future. So I really want to deliver on that for people. There's some of the people who've been checking in every month for 2 years to say, how's it all going? Is it still going forward? I really want to get this done. For some people, it was, I don't know, it may have just been a little blip on the radar. Other times you don't know really how they felt about it. They seemed comfortable, but there wasn't a lot of feedback. Then I hear back from them months later saying, you know, I just was looking back over the photos and it was such a great experience or whatever. So, yeah, I really hope it comes off because I want this to get out there.
Well, cool. Well, we'll definitely check back in with you in 6 days from now. I'll press reload on the page and see where you are. Hopefully you don't just make it to $29,997.
I'll have to create a fake account and throw in the last myself.
Put in the last couple bucks. Yeah, totally. Cool. But, I was going to say, so, you know, closing it off here, there's a Kickstarter page, which I'll link to in the YouTube video and on the blog post for this episode. But where would you like people to go to, like, keep up with you? Is it just thatnikonguy.com or any other places?
Well, yeah, that's the homepage, really, where I filter a lot of things through. And there's a community forum there where people are all interacting with each other, which is really cool. It's actually, you know, the internet can be so bitchy and full of angry nerds.
Especially the YouTube community. I don't know.
Yeah. That's where I live.
Yes. But the word vitriol comes to mind. I don't know why.
But thankfully on the community forum, it's really not like that. I've never seen someone get, you know, ask a question and be like, oh, what a stupid noob question. I can't believe you don't know the answer to that. There's none of that crap going on. They quickly get weeded out. So that's really nice. And yeah, and the YouTube channel. So I still put out a whole bunch of videos each week on shooting and, you know, my travels. And lately a lot of travel vlogs as I'm traveling around doing different workshops and that kind of thing. I've got to travel to a lot of cool places lately. So I put out a fair bit of content on that as well.
Very cool. Well, before we go, tell me a little bit about those workshops. Are you putting those together yourself? Are you going, is a company putting them on and just sort of slotting you in as talent? How does that work?
I'm looking at, you know, potentially doing collaborations in the future, but at the moment, no, it's all my workshop. I designed them from the ground up, and
nice.
There's a lot of work involved, man. It's, I mean, I love it. I often say on the channel, if people saw the reality of my day job, they may not actually be envious of me, but I still am very thankful for the life I lead. So no complaints. But, designing, say, my main workshop is the Take Control of the Light workshop. It's 2.5 days, and it was weeks, months of work to put it together and structure it. And I'm traveling with 100 pounds of equipment to run the workshops, light stands, pocket wizards, flashes, all the modifiers.
Yeah.
Then we get in a whole bunch of models, and just timing it out so it makes sense takes time. You know, I did practice runs with people to make sure, is this flowing logically? And, you know, you still make tweaks. You realize actually that would work if I brought it in earlier. So that's a great one. That one we do up to 12 people is the maximum class size, and we get up to 4 models at a time in to shoot with. Nice. And that's just all about the light. So how it works, all of its variables, how you can control it, modify it to get the results you want, rather than, as I say, just using your camera as a photocopier, actually going out there and creating something. And then the other one is the style of photography that I do in private bodies, which is intimate nude portraiture workshop. So we get in a professional nude model, and that's a 4-hour workshop looking at how you can create all those different kinds of images, how you can reveal and conceal with posing and lighting and all of those things.
And what are we looking at?
4 people.
What are we looking at price-wise for both of these workshops?
The Take Control of the Light is $800 for 2.5 days, and that always goes up with an early bird discount of 10% for the first however long it's up, normally until a month before. Mm-hmm. And then the intimate portraiture is $495. That one's limited to 4 students per model max.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you taking the time. I know we had some hiccups trying to get this thing going at the beginning, but I think this turned out to be a fantastic interview. It was perfect. Thank you.
Oh, lovely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, and I hope I can twist your arm sometime within your busy schedule to come on This Week in Photo as the co-host to help me fight the good fight for, you know, for Nikon. Not that, you know, not that who cares about the gear, but, you know, I seem to be constantly outnumbered on my show, but that's okay.
Well, happy to give you reinforcement in that regard, but a topic I'm more passionate about is how we view photography as, whether it's an art or a creative thing or a technical thing. So would love to come on and chat more about that sometime.
Perfect. And that's what we do. That's perfect. Okay. Well, you have a good trip, and make sure you guard against the evil things in your 2-star hotel there and have a good trip back home. And once again, congratulations. It's going to be a successful Kickstarter campaign.
Thank you so much. Really nice to speak to you, Frederick.
Okay. All right. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.